Emotional Bites, making sense of your emotional world one theory at a time.
Hey there, Knowledge Explorers. Ready to dive deep?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're tackling something really relatable, I think. Motivation. But not the surface level stuff. We're going deep, deep, deep. Think decades of research, surprising studies, the kind of stuff that makes you go, whoa, I never thought about it like that.
And hopefully it helps you make some positive changes.
Exactly. So get ready to unlock the secrets of self-determination theory, or SDT for short.
SDT has had a huge impact on how we understand what truly motivates people.
We've got a treasure trove of research to dig into from 1987 all the way to 2021 that reveals how even the tiniest choices we make or don't make can either fuel our motivation or completely kill it. And, you know, we'll even touch on how the way we talk to ourselves, the environments we create, can make all the difference.
It's amazing how much our surroundings impact our drive.
Totally. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's start with the basics. What exactly is SDT and why should we even care?
You know, it's funny because when people hear self-determination theory, they sometimes zone out. But at its core, it's about what makes us feel, you know, alive, like we're in the driver's seat of our own lives. And it all boils down to three basic psychological needs that we all have, regardless of, well, anything.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Lay those needs on me.
All right. So first up, autonomy. This isn't about being like a lone wolf. It's about having the freedom to choose your own path.
It's like that feeling of I'm doing this because I want to, not because I have to, right?
Exactly. Next up, competence. We all crave that feeling of being good at something, of mastering a skill, you know, being capable.
Oh, 100%. That sense of accomplishment when you finally nail a recipe or learn a new language.
Yeah.
It's like this internal high five. You know what I mean?
Totally. And finally, relatedness. This one's all about feeling connected to others, feeling like you belong.
Because at the end of the day, we're social creatures, right? We thrive on connection.
Precisely. And here's where things get really cool. When these three needs are met, autonomy, competence, and relatedness, they spark a special kind of motivation called intrinsic motivation. It's that beautiful thing where you're doing something for the pure joy of it, no carrots or sticks required.
So it's not about external rewards or pressure, but about that internal fire that keeps you going because you genuinely enjoy the journey.
Exactly. Think about hobbies or a time you got lost in a project you were passionate about.
Now, I'm curious about the flip side. What happens when these needs aren't met? When we feel controlled, pressured, like we're not really in control of our own lives?
That's when things start to go south. Our motivation takes a nosedive, our well-being takes a hit, and it can even impact our relationships. You know, there's this really interesting study from 1978 by Zuckerman and his colleagues.
Ooh, I love a good study. Hit me with it.
So they gave college students puzzles to solve, right? And here's the thing. The students who got to choose which puzzles they worked on and how long they spent on each one, they were way more motivated than those who had no say in the matter.
So even something as simple as having a choice, even a small one, can make a difference.
Absolutely. It's like giving your brain a little autonomy boost. It tells us that even tiny choices matter because they tap into that fundamental need for autonomy. But on the flip side, when we feel controlled, like we don't have a say, our motivation plummets.
It's like that feeling of being micromanaged at work or constantly told what to do in a relationship, right? It just sucks the joy right out of things.
And it doesn't even have to be someone else controlling us. Sometimes we're our own worst enemies.
Ooh, I feel that. Tell me more about the self-sabotage.
Well, SDT talks about this difference between being ego-involved and task-involved.
Okay, I'm listening. Ego-involved versus task-involved. Go on.
So being ego-involved is when you're motivated by external validation. You want to prove something to yourself or others.
Like, I need to get straight A's to prove I'm smart, or I have to be the best at this job to feel worthy.
Exactly. And while a little bit of that drive can be helpful, being overly ego-involved can actually backfire. Because your self-worth becomes contingent on external outcomes, you're actually more likely to experience anxiety, burnout, and you guessed it, less motivation when things get tough.
It's like that pressure cooker feeling, right?
Precisely. Now, task involved is a different ballgame altogether. This is when you're motivated by the inherent joy and satisfaction of the task itself. You're curious, you're engaged, and your focus is on learning and growing, not proving anything.
It's like the difference between forcing yourself to go for a run because you should and lacing up your sneakers because you genuinely enjoy the feeling of your body moving.
Yes, and the research backs this up. A 1982 study by Ryan found that students who felt pressured to prove themselves in a task, they were actually less motivated than those who were just genuinely interested in the task itself.
So you're telling me that my inner critic, that voice that's always pushing me to be perfect, could actually be working against my motivation.
You got it. It's not about getting rid of ambition or striving for excellence. It's about recognizing the difference between the pressure that fuels us and the pressure that makes us feel trapped, even if it's coming from within.
Okay, that's a game changer. But how do we actually make that shift? How do we quiet that inner critic and tap into that task-involved, joyful kind of motivation?
That's the million-dollar question, right? And luckily, SDT gives us some really helpful tools and strategies.
Well, don't leave us hanging. Spill the beans. What are these magical tools and strategies?
Well, one of the most powerful things we can do is pay attention to how we talk to ourselves and others.
Oh, you mean like our communication style?
Exactly. You know how sometimes someone gives you feedback and it just makes you want to crawl into a hole?
Oh, yes, I've been there. It's the worst.
But then other times, someone can say almost the same thing, but in a way that makes you feel seen, supported, and motivated to try again.
Okay, yeah, I get that. So it's not just about what we say, but how we say it.
You got it. And the research backs this up. There's this fascinating study from 1983 by Ryan, Mims, and Kostner. They found that when rewards were framed in a controlling way, like you have to do this to get that, it actually backfired. It made people feel pressured and actually decreased their internal motivation. But get this, when the same rewards were framed more autonomously, like, hey, it would be awesome if you could achieve this, but no pressure, it didn't have that negative effect.
So it's like the same message, but with a totally different vibe.
Right. It's about creating a sense of choice and ownership versus a sense of obligation or pressure. And, you know, this applies to how we talk to ourselves, too.
Oh, tell me more about that. I'm definitely guilty of some negative self-talk.
Well, think about it. Instead of saying, oof, I should go to the gym, what if you said, it would feel amazing to move my body today? What kind of workout sounds fun?
Okay, that's a much nicer way to talk to myself. Less drill sergeant, more supportive friend.
Exactly. It's about finding ways to make those positive choices more appealing and aligned with your values.
So we've talked about the power of choice, the importance of supportive language, and this whole idea of internal versus external motivation. But what about the bigger picture? Like, how does this all play out in our environments, our schools, workplaces, families? Can we actually create more autonomy-supportive spaces in those areas?
That's such an important question. And the research says, yes, we absolutely can. And it all starts with understanding how our environments impact our motivation.
So give us the lowdown. How can we make our environments, especially the ones where we spend a lot of time, more supportive of that innate need for autonomy?
Well, let's start with schools, because that's where a lot of our beliefs about learning and achievement are shaped, right?
Makes sense. What can we do differently in those environments?
Well, imagine a classroom where kids have some say in what they learn, how they learn it, and how they demonstrate their understanding.
Okay, I like where you're going with this. Give me an example.
Sure. Instead of just lecturing at kids, what if teachers presented a topic and then gave students options for how they wanted to explore it? Maybe some kids want to do a traditional research paper, while others want to create a video, write a song, or build a model.
So it's about tapping into their individual strengths and interests.
Exactly. And it's not just about the what of learning, but also the why. When teachers take the time to explain the rationale behind assignments, to connect the dots between what they're learning and how it applies to their lives, kids are more likely to be engaged.
It's like that feeling of, oh, this actually matters versus, ah, why do I have to learn this?
Exactly. And it's not just about making kids feel good. The research shows that autonomy-supportive teaching practices actually lead to better academic outcomes.
So we're talking higher motivation, deeper engagement, and even better grades.
Precisely. And you know what's even more interesting? These benefits extend far beyond the classroom.
Okay, I'm hooked. Tell me more.
Well, research has found that when kids were raised in autonomy-supportive environments, they're more likely to grow into adults who are self-motivated, resilient, and better equipped to navigate the challenges of life.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like giving them the tools and the mindset to thrive in an increasingly complex world.
Exactly. And it's not just about kids.
You're right. This applies to adults too, right? Like, think about the workplace. Nobody likes to feel micromanaged or like if they don't have a voice in their work.
100%. And the research shows that companies that prioritize employee autonomy, where people have the freedom to experiment, to take risks, to contribute their unique skills and talents, are more likely to be innovative and successful.
So it's not just good for employee morale, it's good for business.
Exactly. And it's not just about productivity in the bottom line. When people feel a sense of ownership and autonomy in their work, they're more likely to find it meaningful and fulfilling. And, you know, that spills over into every aspect of their lives.
It's like this ripple effect, right? Mm-hmm. More autonomy leads to more happiness, better relationships, a greater sense of purpose, the whole shebang.
Absolutely. And it all starts with understanding these core principles of self-determination theory and finding ways to apply them in our everyday lives.
This has been eye-opening, but I have to admit, I'm a little overwhelmed. Like, it's one thing to understand these concepts, but how do we actually implement them? Where do we even begin? Right? It can feel kind of overwhelming. Like, where do we even start with all this?
Well, I always say start with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, before we go about trying to change the world, let's look at our own lives.
Okay, I like that. So, step one, self-reflection. What are we reflecting on exactly?
Ask yourself, what truly motivates me? Do I thrive in environments with a lot of structure and clear expectations? Or do I come alive when I have more freedom and autonomy?
And how do we figure that out? I mean, it's not always obvious, right?
Totally. Think about times you've felt really energized and engaged in your work or personal projects. What were the conditions like? Did you have a lot of autonomy? Or were there clear guidelines?
And on the flip side, think about times you felt like totally drained and unmotivated.
Exactly. Once you have a better understanding of your own motivational style, you can start making choices that align with what works best for you.
So if you realize you're someone who thrives on structure, maybe you create your own structure in environments that feel a little too loosey-goosey.
Yes. Like if you're working on a creative project, instead of just waiting for inspiration to strike, maybe you set aside a specific time each day to work on it, or you create a detailed outline to follow.
And if you're more autonomy-oriented, maybe you need to be more assertive about setting boundaries and asking for what you need in environments that feel too controlling.
Exactly. It's all about finding that sweet spot. And once you've figured out what works for you, you can start applying those same principles to your interactions with others.
Oh, that's interesting. So how does understanding our own motivational style help us better support others?
Well, when you're coming from a place of understanding and empathy, you're more likely to interact with others in a way that supports their autonomy, even if their style is different from your own.
Can you give us an example of what that looks like in practice?
Sure. Let's say you're a parent and your child is refusing to do their homework. Instead of getting into a power struggle, you can try to understand why they're resisting.
Maybe they're feeling overwhelmed, or maybe they're just not interested in the material.
Exactly. And once you understand the root of the problem, you can start brainstorming solutions together. Maybe you help them break down the assignment into smaller chunks, or maybe you find a different way for them to engage with the material.
So it's about finding ways to support their autonomy, even within the context of, like, rules and responsibilities.
Exactly. Yeah. And that applies to all our relationships with our partners, our coworkers, our friends. It's about creating a culture of mutual respect and understanding.
It's like that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You can tell someone what to do, but you can't force them to be motivated.
Right. But you can create an environment where they want to drink, where they want to learn and grow and thrive.
This has been such an insightful conversation. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface of this whole self-determination theory thing.
Oh, we've only just begun. But hopefully this deep dive has sparked your curiosity and given you some food for thought.
It definitely has. To our amazing listeners, we encourage you to keep exploring this topic. Dig into the research, experiment with different approaches, and most importantly, be kind to yourself and others along the way. And remember, even small changes can create a ripple effect, leading to greater autonomy, joy, and well-being in all areas of your life.
We'll see you in our next deep dive. Happy exploring, everyone.
Until then, keep those minds curious.